Hey, welcome to Bros Watch Payload 2. I'm Marco Sparks.
And I am Benjamin Light. That's how the podcast is going to go, huh?
That's how it's going to go.
Okay.
That's where we're at, folks.
This week on the pod.
No one's watched this movie.
I wonder. This week on the pod, we are pre-gaming for Pretty Little Liars Summer School, which starts in like 4 days. By watching the movie that they stole the poster from. If you recall, the first poster that came out wasn't a real poster. It was another movie's poster. They just like erased that movie's name from and put Pretty Little Liars Summer School on top of. It was the one with like the blonde bimbo with like a megaphone shut down her mouth. Mm-hmm. So that movie is called Student Bodies, the 1981 movie, written by Mickey Rose and directed by Mickey Rose and Michael Ritchie, uncredited. I think Michael Ritchie did an Alan Smithy for this. He took his name off it. It's terrible.
An Alan Smithy, not an Alan Smithy. Yeah. I've got a lot of messages about it, so I just want to say right now, I have not watched or listened to that PLL true crime podcast with Paige and the Jenna thing.
All right. Yeah.
I appreciate everyone's interest and my opinion on it. I have not watched it.
I saw someone on the
PLL subreddit. I have watched 20 minutes of it.
Sorry. Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I saw someone on the PLL subreddit like doing a recap of it. It sounded kind of, I don't know, like a lot of like speculating on like who among the cast was sleeping with each other, which to me is kind of like talking out of school. Like if it wasn't you, like if you wanted to reveal that about yourself, like go ahead or whatever. But like, I don't know, guessing about like other people on the cast and like who's hooking up, that just seems kind of shitty.
Well, it's kind of Lindsay Shaw's whole thing now. It's what she's been doing on her other podcasts.
I think with the other one, it was like, it was her and the other guy both talking about them hooking up. So it's like, I don't really want to hear that, but at least like, you're both like kind of, you know, okay with that information getting out. Whereas this is like, kind of like, I don't know, like, you know, keep it in house, man. There's no need to go blabbing about that.
Yeah, but they've, that's begat other things, especially with all the Nickelodeon shit coming out recently. Like, I mean, I
sincerely do not care about Lindsay Shaw's career as like a has-been who gossips. I don't know, have fun with that, anyone who's interested, but it's not for me. I didn't watch any of those shows anyway.
Not into Lindsay Shaw.
Yeah, sorry, guess we'll never get him on the pod now. There's another thing I wanted to follow up on. Apparently it's been reported that Arya and Ezra did not in fact end up adopting Imogen's kid. Instead, two gay men did, who I don't know if we'll see them in the series or not, but apparently people have seen the first 5 episodes of Pretty Little Liars Summer School and revealed that, which to me, honestly, cowardly. Like, stand by your writing, you hacks. Like, if you wanted to go there to begin with, like, I don't know, you get no points now.
Couldn't get that Lucy Hale cameo.
I guess that's what it means. Yeah, I feel like they wouldn't have changed it if they could have gotten the Lucy Hale as already cameo,
which I feel like leads to a whole other storyline, because I feel like what I read is that Imogen is maybe trying to get the baby back or be a part of the baby's life, which I feel
Why
like
would you write that into your show? You wrote the kid out. Was it going to
be an Arya and Ezra storyline if they had the kid?
Like, if you got rid of the kid, kids are like just awful to TV shows. They ruin TV shows when you have like a baby. You got rid of the baby. Now you can do your normal show. Why are you trying to get the baby back? It's terrible. Stupid idea. Also, I saw that somebody put a microphone in front of Marlene King's face and asked her if she would like want to write a season of Pretty Little Liars Original Sin / Summer School or whatever, and she said, "Oh, sure." And so now people are, you know, making news about that. Would you like a job that pays you money? And the person responding is like, "Yeah, I guess, sure, why not?" You know. It's like, oh yeah, so and so said they'd totally be back for a new Star Wars movie. It's like, well, of course they would. Would you like a job with money? Yes, of course.
Also, basic media training tells you that you never say no.
Yeah.
In an interview, when they say no, it's some real nuclear
or
shit
you just
happened.
Want more money, basically. Yeah. Any other follow ups before we get to our main event?
No, let's just shoot ourselves in the foot here already.
Oh, the main event is me announcing that you can now pre-order book 4 the Trouble Girl Detective series titled Game On Trouble. It's on Kindle now for pre-order. If you pre-order now, you get 25% off. If you wait, we will jack that price up on you. So, you know, go ahead and pre-order now. It comes out October 1st, 2024. The hardcover and paperbacks will be available for sale day of release. But yeah, get in on that pre-order now. Let's bump those pre-orders up.
Yeah, and the audiobook narrated by Lindsay Shaw.
No, thank you. I would love to do an audiobook of these books. We get requests for that all the time. I'm only one man, you know. I don't even know how to begin to do that kind of production. I suppose you could just hire someone to do it, but I don't know. Yeah, if anyone listening has the inside track on like an easy way to do audiobooks, let me know.
Yeah, there's some like basic companies, but all right, cool. Are we ready to talk about this movie?
Oh, just one more thing to say is if you go to gameontrouble.com, that'll take you to our website where you can kick off that pre-order, read a synopsis of the book. Very excited about it. And now that there's a hardcore deadline, I really need to, you know, finish rewriting it.
Has anyone figured out the code?
They have not, no. Cool. Which I feel like I gave a pretty good hint in the second blog post, but no one has yet figured it out. Maybe these are easier to me than they are to other people because I'm the one making them. I don't know. They don't seem that hard to me, but did you figure out the code? What is it?
We can talk about it off air.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah. Student Bodies, 1981. Marco, do you have an opening statement on this?
Are we doing opening statements?
I don't know. We can. I feel like this could be a very short podcast because I'm not sure how much I had to say about this particular movie.
Yeah. My opening statement is I watched the movie. There are parts of it that are not terrible. They're charming, but as a whole, it's just too dated. It's a classic example of like whatever was in the trailer was one of your funniest bits, with the exception of the movie straight up telling you to go fuck yourself at one point.
Okay. For me, this was maybe like the longest 85 minutes of my life. I just thought this was awful. It was so boring and bland, and I really wasn't prepared for just like the like in your face racism of the whole movie. Like, it's just all over the place. Like, wow, okay. I don't think I even mildly chuckled once. It was all a lot of very broad humor that just was not hitting for me at all. And it went on forever. That's the worst thing about a bad comedy is like you can see the bits they set up and it just takes forever to get to the next one.
What was the first point where you paused to see how much time you had left?
So I really restrained myself. I'm like, I'm not going to check right away. But eventually I was like, God, how much time is left in this? And it was only like 30 minutes in. I was like, Jesus Christ, we've got a long way to go.
I got to the football game.
I don't even remember when that is. Yeah,
that's about halfway. And I was like, fuck me. But I mean, thank God it's only like an 82 minute film.
You feel every single minute of that 85 minutes. What are you drinking? Anything?
Suntory,
huh? A little whiskey.
I'm trying to have whiskey on the rocks. Time here. Yourself?
I have a Cabernet Sauvignon.
Okay.
It's a healthy glass of it. We'll see if I can get through the whole thing of it while we pod.
Kristen Bell size glass. Yeah, so this is a movie starring a woman who's claimed the fame that she was the dancer in a Jake Isles Band music video.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that the Toby Badger character? I don't know where they found these people, but I don't think any of them went on to act in anything.
One of them went on to act as a politician and a judge in Texas.
Yeah.
And there's Richard Belzer. He's part of the Munchverse.
Oh, right. Is he in this? Is he like the...
The breather.
Yeah.
The voice of the breather. Yeah.
The breather. I was not feeling it. I don't know. That was pretty cringe.
There's a great AV Club interview with him where they ask him about it. And he's just like, did I do that? I mean, I've watched it. I know that's my voice. I don't remember doing it, though. I hope they paid me.
I don't know. Was this like really funny in 1981? It's hard to tell.
Box office bomb. This is a classic 33% on Rotten Tomatoes.
who are the people who gave it a positive rating? I don't even know. I don't get it. It's a lot of like really broad humor where it's like there'll be these repeated bits where like we know somebody's been murdered in this house, and then like the parents are home, you know, the babysitter's been murdered, and the mother will see, like, she'll scream and you'll be like, "What is it? Did you find the body?" And it's like, "Oh no, there's a bunch of dishes that haven't been done. Like, how could she not have done these dishes?" And then she screams again, "What is it?" "Oh, they like, you know, didn't turn off the TV." And then like when she finds the body, she has no reaction at all. And it's like, get it? Rimshot.
There's also a kind of racist joke.
There's a ton of very racist jokes in this movie.
There's a implication with the mother there and how much she's paying and how much she's going to pay.
Well, they're all white, then, aren't they?
Yeah, but I feel like they're, I don't know.
There's plenty of other racism. I didn't really pick up on it there.
There's an implication there of a certain
what?
More ethnic story type. Yeah.
Is there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I didn't pick up on that at all.
I mean, which is a shame because I did kind of chuckle at the beginning when she goes into the kitchen to like get some water or whatever, and like the sink is just overflow of like fucking dirty dishes.
Well, when
I laughed at that, but then when they call it out as part of the mom's joke, I was like, that's so funny now.
Well, when we first see the kitchen before the babysitter dies, that stuck out. I'm like, why are there so many dishes in that sink? And it's like, oh, we're just like setting up a joke for later, kind of.
Also, this is a comedy in like the Abrams, you know, Airplane / like scary movie,
yeah,
kind of styles. It's not really,
I guess you could say this is a precursor to Scary Movie, which
there's,
I guess for you know, point of reference, I don't think Scary Movie is particularly funny either. I think those movies are pretty awful. So I don't know, maybe if you like those movies, you'd get more humor out of this movie than me.
Like I don't know, this podcast is difficult because there's nothing worse than two white guys on a podcast talking about the nature of comedy and like what's funny, yeah, and how jokes work. Also, my question for you is, what's with all the fucking Dr. Pepper?
Yeah, there's a ton of Dr. Pepper.
Much. I hope Dunkin' Donuts, KFC.
I hope so they got paid for it. You know, like I hope that was a way to finance the movie, because otherwise, although I don't know why Dr. Pepper would want to pay to be in this movie of all movies.
It seems like it's a non-union film or something. I mean, it was Paramount scooped it up because they needed content during a strike. Like,
yeah, so I mean, there's nobody other than the Richard Belzer thing. There's no one you'd recognize in it. Like,
but there's so many characters. Like, if you did a shot for every I'm a Pepper shirt you saw, mm-hmm, you'd be dead.
Or just like cans of Dr. Pepper in the foreground for no particular reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And part of this, I could see where some of this at the time, like in like 1980, I could see where you would read the script and chuckle, like, Judy, you're not responding to my maleness.
That's so, while I was watching this, I was thinking, like, have the writers of Riverdale seen this movie? I'd be curious to know. And like, I don't know, like, were they inspired by this movie or something? Because
just a poster.
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say that this movie also likes to recognize a lot of tropes and point them out, but doesn't really have much else to go on besides that. So maybe there's a simpatico with the Riverdale PLL, you know, summer school writers, where they're like, oh yes, we love a movie that just points out tropes to the audience and then doesn't do anything with them.
I feel like they just saw a poster that was kind of schlocky and pulpy of the era.
And weren't aware that it was like pretty racist and homophobic.
Yeah.
I mean, they used the poster to begin with, so, you know, maybe they wouldn't mind.
But I mean, also, it's not like this was a creative team that has lasted that's going to like put up a stink when their poster is appropriated for.
I mean, did not live to see 9/11. So, yeah, like, I don't know who's writing for this movie, who's caping for it.
Yeah. I mean, the recurring like thing with like the blind guy and the guy in the wheelchair kept coming up.
Yeah. While watching it, I kept thinking to myself, like, was this in any way considered like subversive at the time? You know, is there a read on this movie where it's like, actually, that was rather progressive for the day? I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that's not the case.
I feel like it was like the fucking 80s that all these like comedians want to go back to, where it was just everything was on the table.
Yeah, I guess so. So I guess like a brief kind of setup for the movie is it's just a dumb high school slasher movie where there's a breather character. It's like a Michael Myers thing where he's just watching a lot. And then, you know,
more, it's more of a, like a Black Christmas dude. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And it's always like a couple, like a young couple, a boy and a girl who they never actually have sex. It doesn't seem like they're just always about to have sex. No,
yeah. But, everyone is about to have sex,
but it's like just their intent to have sex is enough to have, you know, bring the ire of the killer on them, and they get killed. And it's always the girl gets killed in some weird kind of goofy fashion, kind of like horror movie joke fashion. And then the guy always just gets like covered up with a like trash bag. Giant black trash bag and like suffocated.
Because the men are trash.
Mm-hmm. Like the first thing, it's like a Halloween thing where it's like the babysitter's there and whatever with her boyfriend, and like they're about to do it. And then the killer shows up and like opens up a desk, and there's like all these weapons in the desk. It's like, oh, there's a knife and a noose and a gun and an axe. And he's like breathing hard and like running his hands over all of them. And then finally picks up a paperclip, and it's like, ha ha ha, he chose the paperclip. Like that's the kind of humor that's in this movie. And then he like seemingly stabs the girl to death with a paperclip. Even though you don't really see it.
You see the men are face when they find the body.
Yeah. But I mean, there's no real, I wouldn't even call this like a gory movie in the slightest. Like it's incredibly tame.
It's like the single F-bomb at the 26 minute mark is like how they bump this up to an R rating.
Is that really enough to give it an R just to say fuck you?
Maybe in 81. And I can see where that joke would appeal to me on paper, where it's like this kind of
in a better movie, I think it works.
Concrete-esque guy like telling you the straight facts about like what you have to do to get a PG-13, what you have to do in an R rating. So that's why the producers wanted to film this, want to say fuck you. Yeah. There's no nudity in the movie.
No. Yeah. No, it's very tame for wanting to be an R-rated like slasher comedy. There's like one scene where they're in a girl's locker room, but they all have bras on. Like it's not like prurient or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, I don't really know what to say about this movie. We could go through the plot, I guess. It has some gimmicks in it where like every time somebody dies, it puts like a little body count thing on screen. It's like, oh, body count one, body count two,
which or suspect
could be funny. I feel like the people making this movie don't really get comedy. I don't know that I would say I am like the master of comedy. I just know it when I see it. And I'm like, this wasn't very funny. You know, like that's the only way I can explain it. Like there's something about the timing or the pacing or the presentation that just like isn't working for me.
So I would say that there are bits that work, but they're minor and they just don't sustain even 82 minutes. A couple of the actors from the faculty are not per se bad, but they're not given great material nor presented in a way that works. It likes a lot of Airplane-esque sight gags, like the main girl that the Prince Valiant haircut is getting undressed in the girl's locker room, and she has a button on her shirt or her blouse that says, I said no. And then when she takes off her blouse, her bra has a button in the same place that says, for the last time I said no.
Mm-hmm.
Then like later on, just a giant button that says no in all caps. Because
she's the virginal one or whatever. Yeah.
The ROTC guy, when he takes off his shirt, he's got like the rank insignia tattoos on his arms. Even his condom has a little rank insignia thing on it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if that kind of humor really mixes well with a horror movie, but I mean, that's just me. Maybe this kind of humor is like more popular back then because it was more fresh. Other than like Airplane, you know, you hadn't really seen a ton of this sort of like really goofy style or Top Secret, you know.
And it's the first one later to take on this genre. So I guess if you were seeing this in the theater, I know it's had like a lot of like late night TV play. I'm sure that could give you like a chuckle.
But I mean, I guess you could do this late night if you just cut out that one scene with the fuck you.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
There's nothing else in it like would get edited, I don't think. Maybe like some slight gore shots.
Mm-hmm. Is this your cat? What are you looking at?
Oh, no, I just have the ALGS on over on the side. Just looking to see if Dark Sierra is going to win.
Yeah, I don't know. I have the movie in front of me. I have a few bits. Like African student bit just made me.
Oh my God. The whole thing with the African student was just like, I kind of wanted to turn it off at that point. It was like,
they kill him?
Yeah, they killed him later. It was just like, ha ha, we killed that guy. LOL. Like, everything about that, I'm like, is there some sort of layer to this other than just racism? And it's like, no, I guess not. I guess it was just like time for the movie to be like, we're going to be racist for a little bit. Yeah. Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah, I think it's just this weird 80s mindset where to them it's not mean-spirited, but they think anything other than American they can make fun of.
Yeah, there was no sense of like, I don't know, like a wink or a nod or like we're making fun of the Americans or anything like that. It was just like, no, this is just, you know, racism funny?
It is saying that the audience, you get this too. You're one of our people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you don't have to look any farther. Like even moving past the racism and the stuff, like just the character, the actor known as the Stick.
Oh, is that the really tall janitor guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's all sorts of high comedy with him. Yeah. I mean, I think his visual look, like he must have had like weird, like hand extensions on or something. I don't know. Is that just his body or?
I think it's just his body.
Cause he could do a thing where he could like put his hands behind his back and basically like kind of like palms open, like touching the back of his back. I don't know if I'm describing that the right way, but like seemingly like no human could bend that way, but he could.
He could take his right hand mm-hmm. and like hand you something fully through like under his legs. Yeah. Yeah. Well, just the way he walks of the mm-hmm. the arm.
See, I thought that must have been a prosthetic. Maybe he's just like double jointed and really
he's got like lanky. Like a Doug Jones physique. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I how much do we want to go
for? That's when I watch this movie, I'm like, oh God, we don't have a whole lot to podcast about here, do we?
I mean, the joke of the one teacher, the biology teacher, like, it's in her name. Like, you get exactly what they're going for of her.
Oh, what was the joke with her?
Well, her name is Mrs. Van Dyke.
Oh, right.
And her first joke is that you can erase the penis off the male anatomy because it's just useless and ugly. Mm. And then from that point on, she's like obsessed with the other two. I don't know. It's mm-hmm.
there's a whole bit where they're having the funeral for the first two students who died, and it's like there's cheerleaders and marching band and like a color guard, and it's like this whole thing where it's like today's the big day. Like we've been forced by the government to have all of our celebrations on one day, so it's like the day of the big dance and the day of the big parade and the day of the big whatever. Well,
the joke could work because it's reversed.
Yeah,
he's like, it's so funny that the big funeral also happens on the same day as the big game, the big parade, the prom. He's like, it's just like 10 more things, like mm-hmm. it's the ugly's charges and good, bad, and the ugly. And at the end, he's like, isn't it a shame that like cut back and government spending means we have to do all this on one day?
And I think the joke there is that like, oh, horror movies always seem to take place the day of the big dance or the day of the big parade or something like that. So it's like, oh, we're just putting it all there at once. Isn't that funny? Which is like, eh.
Which I mean, like I had a small chuckle just at the initial setup shot of here's the funeral. Why is the principal talking? But anyway, like there's the cheerleaders about to do like who loves life or whatever. But immediately like the one couple goes off to have sex and it's just like, okay, we know what like horror movie ground we're treading. And you know, it's still like an unfinished knot. Cause we're still talking about it in Scream, you know, 10 years later.
There's like 16 years later, but there's so many scenes in this where it's like a couple going off to have sex and it's like, I don't know, maybe this was, you took what you could get in the '80s, but like who would want to have sex in these locations? I mean, I guess the backseat of a car, it's like, sure, whatever. But it's just like underneath the bleachers surrounded by like gross, disgusting food and like trash or like just like in the woods, just on like a cold, misty day.
Inside the float on the parade.
Yeah, inside the parade float. It's just like, okay.
While like children are like waving on top of it. Yeah. I mean, like there's a lot of things like the initial visual gave me like a soft smile that just dissipated, like when we get to the big game and it's like here's what looks like the 49ers playing against a bunch of children.
Yeah, it's a bunch of clear adult football players versus like a bunch of like Pop Warner kids, which like I kept waiting. I'm like, are they going to do something with this joke? And they barely even do. There's like one bit where they like the other, the defense just picks the kid on offense up and like runs the other way, like to the other end zone. You know, like that's the only real bit they do with that. That's like related to the size differential there at all.
Yeah.
You would think that would be funny, you know, like to just see like these adults just like completely wrecking these kids, but like they don't really do it.
But I think you kind of get the general take that they have on horror movies, because most horror movies, they like of this ilk, they feature like a teen protagonist in their friend group, and we're on their side. Whereas this is very much like the main characters are the faculty.
Are they?
I think they get enough. Like, I mean, sure, the one girl is the protagonist, but like clearly the movie wants to keep going back to the adults and having them comment upon all this stuff.
I think I just kind of assume that maybe the adults are like slightly better actors. I don't know.
For sure, they are. Of course, none of them were in a Jake Isles band music video.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, like the gym teacher /
they must sheriff. Have really thought that guy was funny.
Yeah, with his fucking Coors shirt under his flannel.
Oh, and the whole like repeated jokes about the horse head bookends.
Yeah.
Like it's like seemingly the person who wrote this like had a gym teacher who's obsessed with that, or a shop teacher who's obsessed with that. Because it's like, is this a common joke or something? Like horse head bookends? Like I've never heard of that being a thing ever.
That felt like a thread that would not get beaten to death as much, but like later in Barbie, just of like here's where the patriarchy, you know, relies. But I mean that guy himself. A better actor than others. Same thing for the principal. It's just eventually this script just peters out.
It peters out like 15 minutes in, and then it just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah.
Like there's just like so much, or it's just like nothing happening. You're just like, all right, let's get to the next couple who wants to go off and sleep together. And then, oh, what's that? A killer's showing up. It's like, it's so boring.
Yeah. Well, it's like you can guess that the boyfriend's, I don't know, evil just because of the process of elimination.
But I mean, it's all a dream though. Evil. Like at the end, it's like, oh, you dreamed that whole thing, but then he's evil anyway. Like, yeah, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. Comedy evil though. Like the same way that these kind of things, they don't really have what I would call character progression or arcs. It's just eventually like the jokes lead you to this point.
Yeah, I mean, the whole it's all a dream thing I thought was pretty bad.
The old woman in the trash can there was like a Lynchian visual that scared the fuck out of me for just a second.
Oh, when they're like chasing her like whole psychedelic thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, and like, I don't know, like a better movie could have pulled off the bit of all the characters are different archetypes than the ones presented in the dream, but...
Yeah. Trying to think what else is in this movie.
It's not going to make sense to anyone listening, because
no, it's just a series of bits.
Mm-hmm.
All the students look pretty interchangeable. Like the hair is awful too. I mean, this is 1981.
Yeah.
I try to think like this, Halloween was 78, so it's been, you know, seemingly 2 years probably since, and then they started making this movie because it came out in 81. Like, I'm sure there were a few other Halloween ripoffs in the meantime, but like Black Christmas maybe, but it seems like they're trying to get in on it pretty early.
Well, I didn't look up the veracity of were there actually 26 movies released in 1980, but
yeah, the movie starts out with a title card that says this motion picture is based on an actual incident. Last year, 26 horror films were released. None of them lost money, which is basically its way of telling you like this is just a cash grab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it just feels like for it being what I feel like, I assume it's just like a very, at the time, low budget, almost independent production.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impressive in that regard. I think it gets bought by Paramount because they're in a strike and they need content. It like bombs in the theaters, then it just has a life.
I'd like to think that people were like, no, we don't want to watch this scab movie. And so that's why they stayed away. But it's also a terrible movie.
I doubt back then that the majority of the theater goers knew there was a strike.
Yeah, I'm sure. there's the bit where it's all the girls in the locker room and the breather is like watching them from behind some lockers. And basically it's like he jerks off and passes out is what the impression you're left with. You don't see that. You just like hear him like panting.
Mm-hmm.
Charming.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, semen oozes out of a phone.
I think it's drool.
You think that's drool?
I hear you because it's way too milky.
Yeah.
But I think because he's like panting and moaning and stuff, I think it's meant to be saliva. But yeah,
I mean, I was ready to give it some amount of credit for that visual, but if it's just drool, I mean, the visual is actually
kind of impressive. I mean, in low budget terms of filmmaking, you can probably guess how they like get the phone to shake like that, but it's.
Well, they do a bit where it's like the phone is ringing and the score is really like, dan, 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 you know, and then like she picks it up and it's breathing and then she picks it up again.
Dropped out.
And the guy's like, hi, it's still breathing. And then she picks it up again and it's the score on the phone, you know. Yeah, it's very goofy.
Yeah. I mean, it's the bits that like gave me that half a smile or what have you, they're clearly informed by the astute eye that, you know, witnessed the tropes and the things that would later be done better in your Airplanes and your Abrams and your Zuckers and your Top Secrets and what have you. Now it's like this is all picked up by people on podcasts who,
yeah,
you know, it's fodder for jokes.
Yeah, the Malvert guy, the stick guy, a recurring joke with him like pissing blood.
Yeah.
Which, right on. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And just like peeing everywhere.
Peeing everywhere and just carrying like a blow up doll with him and
blow up doll with him in multiple scenes. He like takes her to the prom with him.
The whole thing is that he has, you know, by normal societal standards, whatever, he's got a physical deformity or he looks different. So therefore he's creepy. And they play with that with one of the first jokes where he's doing the crossword puzzle and he needs a 5-letter word for whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, creep, you know.
And he's like, oh, that's the answer.
Yeah,
there will just be like these drive-by, like pretty offensive jokes where it's like, oh, it's the parade and there's like a float for the like prom queen or whatever, and then it's like, oh, and there's a prom boy queen or whatever, and it's like, ha ha ha, gay man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The girl's name was Dagmar in the movie.
Dagmar, who?
The girl on the top of the float with the.
Oh, who goes under the float to have sex? Okay, that's an interesting name.
The choice of how they filmed the babysitter at the beginning, I thought was really interesting. We're coming over her like right shoulder, like zooming in on her. We only get a couple of like actual shots of her, like medium shots. I don't know if there's really a lot of close-ups. A lot of stuff of like her stiletto rubbing against the coffee table on the phone. Mm-hmm. But then like more, we go back behind her more to kind of get that horror movie vulnerability where behind you, we're sneaking up on you. But then, like when they get to the stuff with like Dagmar on the float, I was like, "Is this stolen footage? Like that you like had to get guerrilla style?" Because it's a lot of stuff behind her.
So I think they don't have a set for it. I think they're literally like underneath a float construct or something. Like it doesn't seem like they have a way to shoot it well because they're like forcing a camera into like a tight place or something.
I can't wonder. Did they like run and like put their actors in like a real parade that happened to be going by somewhere in Texas and?
Yeah.
Steal some visuals.
There's a whole sequence with the school psychiatrist who like keeps on like disarranging things on his desk and walls, like making the picture posters crooked.
That bit was kind of funny for a second.
Yeah, it did not work for me at all.
As he goes to everything that's perfectly straight and he makes it just a little bit crooked. Yeah. Every time everybody picks up a phone, the breather is breathing on it.
The breather.
Also the breather. I get what they're going for, the joke with the you know, horror movies and Billy from Black Christmas and all that stuff. I don't like excessive weird mouth noises, wet mouth noises.
Yeah, I can do without some of that.
Yeah.
The kind of conceit, if there is one, is that like, you know, it's like all these people are being killed because they're having sex or about to have sex, and our main character is like supposed to be kind of virginal and pure and like, you know, isn't into that, but is kind of into that. And, you know, she's, you know, I think it's a beautiful thing between a man and a woman who are married, you know, but like she's still, you know, fascinated by it or whatever.
Yeah.
She finally does it. She wakes up at the end and it was all a dream. And they have like, do they have a funeral for someone there? I feel like there was a funeral at the end.
Her.
Oh, right, her. So she wakes up as all just a dream, and her boyfriend is there, and they go out like wandering into like the misty woods to like make out, and she's like, "I'd like to have sex now," you know, like it's time, you know, and then like suddenly he has on the like the weird teal like dish clothes that the killer has on in real life, and he just like strangles her, and then they have her funeral at the end. It's like ha 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 ha, and then she pops out of the grave, her hand does, to like choke this guy, and that's how it ends. It's like they didn't know how to end the movie.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, folks, just go watch April Fool's Day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I was expecting from this movie. I didn't think it was going to be good.
Did you know about this movie when you said we should podcast about this?
Nothing.
Okay. Did you know it was a comedy?
Not really, no.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. I found out yesterday when I watched the trailer, and I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I never watched the trailer. So I don't know. My bad. Scott, this is bad. I mean, were you even like mildly invested in like the quote unquote mystery, like the whodunit aspect here?
At a certain point, I was just like, not that I expect them to follow any kind of logical progression or fair play or anything, but I'm like, it's the boyfriend, right? That's the only thing if you could say I hung on for anything. But
he was present during certain scenes, so it couldn't have been him. Yeah,
but like, not that it matters, but like the woman who's his mother in the classroom at the end of the dream, she's talking about how he's the killer, right? He was her son. He killed all the girls. She killed all the boys.
There's like a drive-by transgender joke there.
Yeah.
It's like the principal is the killer because like the idea of all these like hot young women like having sex with other people like fills him with rage or whatever. He has to kill them. And then the other killer, he kills all the women, but then I'm just going to call her the mother. She's like the school something or other, the secretary.
Something or other. Yeah. They're there to hype up the principal.
Mm-hmm. She's been killing all the men with the plastic bags just to like clean up after, so there'd be no witnesses, basically. Clean up after her son.
But there's like, it's almost it's a South Park joke, though, where the girl's like, oh my God, you're his mother, and she's like, no, his father. And it's like, it's just like almost wordplay rather than,
yeah,
but like, yeah, I mean, you watch in 2024, there's no way you can't be offended. There's like no door you could open into this movie where there's not something that's gonna be hurtful, or like you said, not in on the joke, not making fun of the more aggressive parties or what have you.
I don't know, do we have anything else to say about this? For some reason, when the principal takes his shirt off, he has an I Heart New York like tattoo or something.
Like the t-shirts. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know what the joke is there exactly.
Of those t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Did those just get popular in 1980 and that's why they had to squeeze this in? I don't know.
The lead is in like a weird blonde wig, like curly blonde wig for like the second half of the movie at the dance. I don't know. She kind of looks like what's her face from Grease at the end of Grease, maybe, you know, Olivia Newton-John. At least the hairstyle. Yeah.
Got a night stud. Yeah. Is it the joke that she's got like balloons in her top or something?
She's got like a, I don't know what you'd call that, like a tube top on or something. It's very busty. And she's like, I stuff balloons into my top or whatever. And it makes like balloon sound effects. And the boyfriend's like, can you keep them in or something like that?
The sad thing is, I feel like in 1981 dollars, you could have spent $1 million and just like actually converted this into a real horror movie.
It would have been a bad one. I don't know. Would this be a better movie? It's just a straight up schlocky horror movie where it's like students keep getting killed and like you amp up the gore and you put some nudity in it. I feel like it probably makes more money.
But I mean, like, not all those movies had to be good, obviously.
Yeah.
In the horror movie 1980s conversation, like Prom Night comes up. You and I have both seen Prom Night. That's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
It's a terrible movie. Terror Train is
I watched so many bad horror movies when I was in college, like The Dorm That Dripped Blood, like all the ones they reference and Scream, basically. I would like seek those all out and watch them. I was like, oh, this movie's awful, actually.
Yeah, and there's a lot of 1980s twists that just aren't cool now, like Sleepaway Camp and what have you, mm-hmm. Which are relevant in a conversation about PLL, but I don't know that we're the ones to have that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what else to say about this movie in relation to Pretty Little Liars: Summer School. I would hope that this is not like a favorite movie of the writers, because that doesn't bode well if that's the case.
Well, it's so contrary to the very modern, for lack of a better terminology, woke mindset that they're taking.
I mean, the writers of the show would seem to be fairly liberal. So yeah, yeah. I'm not sure why you'd be like inspired by this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't like the way they go at it all the time or their motives per se. Like, you know, obviously I think social justice is an important thing, and that's clearly something that they espouse on the show that the characters care about.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll be back. I don't know. We're going to record right after the season premiere, right? So I think we might have one episode up maybe Friday.
Well, that should have been a surprise.
It's fine. What are we surprising?
I just feel like I'm going to be drinking a lot more and grumbling more. Is this the shortest episode we've ever done?
It probably, maybe other than like a commentary or an interview or something, just because I don't know. My bad. I thought there'd be more to discuss with this movie, but this is just a terrible movie, and I don't know what else to talk about.
This isn't even as long as a commentary. Yeah. Or it's longer than a commentary? Wow.
All right. It's about 40 minutes so far. 42 minutes.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Lord knows we can talk.
Yeah. GameOnTrouble.com.
There's none of this.
We should have done like a mailbag in advance or something, you know, send us your questions or something just to fill the air.
Which, feel free to do that, folks. But my question for you is, if you have questions about PLL Original Sin, why?
I don't know. The thing that bums me out about the new season is that it doesn't even seem to be like a mystery. Like, it seems like they're kind of saying that the Bloody Rose character is Rose Waters, who's... Do you remember who that is, by any chance?
Is it the mother of...
It's the mother...
Archie?
It's Mother Angela.
Oh, okay. So it's Archie's grandmother.
It was Archie the secret son of Angela? Yeah. I honestly couldn't even remember. Seemingly it's like that grandmother. Like, she is, as I recall, she like went and tried to kill a bunch of the boys at school at some point. I think after her daughter died.
The lunchroom or something with a knife. Yeah, see, this is why I wanted to bring a listener on and just have them explain the plot back to us.
But it seemingly they're saying like, oh yeah, she's Bloody Rose. And so it's like, well, if that's true, that's not very fun to watch, because now it's like, okay, well, you just told us who the killer is. So
I gotta assume it's not a 50 plus year old woman running around in a mask with a knife.
Do you think there's like even a 1% chance that they kill off one of the sinners?
Oh yeah.
You think so?
1%? 1%? I'll take that bet.
1%. Okay. Who do you think they kill besides Mouse?
Oh, besides Mouse?
Is Mouse like the odds on favorite? Like 20-1. If you got to kill somebody off, you kill Mouse off.
I feel like Mouse dies and they're like, oh no, Mouse. And they look over and they're like, Ash, you free? We got an opening. They're like, Ash, do you know computers? Not that Mouse really did a ton of that.
It would be bold to kill off Imogen because she's kind of a worthless character, but I don't think they would, just because Bailey Madison's like the biggest actor, probably.
I mean, the show, if I had to take elements from a show into like a new season, like crawling from the wreckage, it's Tabby and it's Noah.
Mm-hmm.
How quickly does Noah get a new love interest?
It seemed to me very quickly, and it's a female love interest.
Yeah.
It's I can't remember the actor's name, but yeah, they've already kind of leaked a lot of that.
How do you think they handled the guy?
I'm not even sure if he'll be in the show. I don't know. Or if he is, he could. I mean, you could kill him off, but then it's like
rehab with her mom.
Are you gonna do a thing where you kill off the boyfriend and she just like immediately run into the arms of somebody else? But
it's on this show, it's not like. From juvie, right? Or from like work camp, prison camp?
I think so. Yeah. Not that
what do they call it? Side of the road camp?
Not that you'd go to juvie for, you know, her crime of like testing positive for opiates or something.
Was that the crime?
It was like she had some on her. I think she like, okay, they found her mom's and she took the fall.
Yeah. Was the mom taking her urine?
I don't remember. Let's say yes. That would be okay. Good, I guess. I don't know.
I just rewatched the Seinfeld with the where Elaine wants to go see the Bushman in Africa and she's eating the poppy seed muffins. And so finally she gets Mrs. Seinfeld's urine and he's like, "Sorry, Elaine. you might have osteofibrosis." You think the mom is a big... which parents come back? I mean, I don't think you need Noah's mom at all.
Don't you, though? I don't know how you get rid of any of the moms. I think you could... Because Zeke and... I can't remember if this is the actor or the character's name is Corey. I think that was maybe the actor. But Zeke and his wife, Farron's parents, got back together at the end of season one.
Why is it I'm thinking that the character, the mom was named Cora?
It's Corey, I think.
Corey, okay. Oh, that's close to home. Does she have some kind of weird connection to Veronica Hastings?
She's a lawyer, but I don't think there's a connection besides that.
Okay. But the Noah's mom had Caleb's pills, right?
Yeah. But then the writers like completely chickened out and they're like, maybe Caleb was just passing through town at the pharmacy there. It's just like they didn't want to commit to the idea that Caleb lived in Millwood, even though the address was for Millwood. Yeah, it was stupid. I mean, these writers are cowards, so it's not surprising.
So do you think, is Dr. Sullivan in like one episode or is she in?
To win it? Are they going to do a thing where like she's the killer or something, which would be like not that I care about the Dr. Sullivan character, but it's like sort of a betrayal of her character to just be like, oh, she's actually evil after all that.
Wasn't the whole thing, it's like something of her son had did something and that's why she was very worried about
her son was threatened or something. Mona threatened her son. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why she didn't like reveal who Mona was.
Mona with the giant fucking plant. That's just like, put this plant near wherever you have your sessions. It does not contain a recording device. I mean, Dr. Sullivan was my fun season two of PLL theory.
Okay, the mom was named Corey Bryant.
Corey Bryant.
Yeah.
Was the actor named Cora?
No, it's Zakiya Young.
Oh, okay.
I mean, are we going to get more Madame Geary? More of that fun plot line? Is it more ballet?
Well, like, didn't Farron, right?
Yeah.
Farron had a male dancer.
She had Henry. Interest. Yeah.
Henry.
Which it doesn't sound like he's going to be around much because I've seen that actress's Twitter is like, oh, new love interest or whatever. And
okay.
It sounded like more of the same for that character was the impression I got. More like walking away from explosions, creating gifts type, you know.
Oh, okay.
That
okay.
vibe.
Okay. I mean, I wonder if it's the exact same ground, though. Like,
presumably
the back stuff, the mom, dancing.
They wrote this season after the first season, I believe. Is there going to be any sort of... Yeah. Well, but after it aired, I mean. Is there going to be any sort of, like, course correction to be like, maybe we should back off, like, the horrible, like, movie references that we keep putting in Tabby's mouth? Like, maybe let's chill out a little bit. Or is it just going to be the same shit? They're like, audiences love this.
I guess the question was, from a critical perspective, did anyone who didn't give it like the minor voices who gave it like a passing whatever, did anyone ever actually like take the show to task and like how bad it is?
I think just us.
Okay, well, then no. Yeah. There's no need for them to course correct.
No, because I mean, all the reviews are just bots. Like, these aren't real people reviewing the show, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw a review from somebody that was talking about how, like, Zarya should win an Emmy for season two based on the first five episodes.
Sure.
And I'm like,
sure.
I've got her at
7-1, you know?
I'll
let you know. It's Anna Sawai from Shogun. It's Zarya from Pretty Little Liars Summer School. And, you know, the other spots are still open.
I mean, I want to believe this is a real person saying this, regardless if they're, you know, dead on or not. But yeah. I feel like they're not. I don't know. I mean, I know that there's a bunch of new, not just the Lindsay Shaw and Jenna thing one, but there's a bunch of new like PLL podcasts. I wonder if any of them are ever going to go near this shit.
Well, there was like a dumb controversy. Did you see any of that with the name of the Lindsay Shaw, Tam and Cersei podcast?
I know they had to pivot to the true crime thing because of something, but I don't know.
The original name of the podcast was Pretty Little Podcast, I think. But then it was somebody else was like very outraged on Reddit. That's our name. It's like, I hate to break to you guys, but there's like three other podcasts with that same name. It's like you weren't even the first, but whatever. Have fun. Mm. You know, be outraged. Mm. So yeah, it's their thing now is called Pretty Little True Crime. Apparently they bring on some sort of quote unquote like forensics expert onto that podcast to like analyze, like, I don't know, give their like professional opinion on stuff. It sounded dumb. Wow. I don't really get the appeal of that personally. Maybe some people are into it.
On top of, okay, as I wasn't sure based on the thing I saw wherever, if they were doing that or if they were like, at the end, we're just going to talk about some real true crime.
No, they
totally crass and cashing in 10 years too late on a bunch of ladies talking about
true crime stuff. They're just trying to apply the true crime thing to PLL. I don't know. I'm bummed that the PLL Wine Moms seemingly crashed and burned because I was enjoying that one.
There's crashing and there's burning and then there's just straight up imploding.
Yeah, it doesn't exist on the internet anymore. That sucked because that was actually entertaining to listen to for the most part.
Yeah.
And when they had guests on, they wouldn't just ask them, you know, who they think was sleeping with who.
Yeah.
I think actually Ian Harding had a whole story about like having to shit into a bag. It was very Toby-esque.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing now, which I think is still dying. It should be dying out as a fad of the stars who are not the star of a show cannibalizing by doing their own.
I don't think that's dying anytime soon. It's just,
is it revving up even more?
I mean, it's good work if he can get it, you know, if he can, because it's usually not them doing it on their own. It's usually through some sort of like podcast content company something. Yeah.
The best one would be if it was like, some actor got cast as a bit part, like some, like, you know, 30th on the call sheet or whatever. And they started their own current thing with no knowledge whatsoever of their rewatch podcast. But I mean, I don't know. Most of the ones you listen to or you hear about, like, they don't seem like they're taking it very seriously anyway. It's just
other than
like maybe like the office ladies or whatever who are actually having fun. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
All right, well, I think that's it for this podcast. Can't wait for the premiere of Pretty Little Liars : Original Sin : Summer School. Or I'm really curious to know like how they present the title. Like, I assume they have some sort of new title sequence or whatever. Like, what are they actually calling this in the title card?
Presumably just Summer School. Do you think like Original Sin pops up and then like it gets like crossed out?
I don't know, because like this under IMDb, this is just season two of Pretty Little Liars Original Sin. Mm. You know, it's like Summer School is just like the title of the season or something.
But IMDb is still, for the most part, user generated, right? Like,
yeah, but I think there's certain like weird metadata involved with shows where like they, you know, just for organizational like archival purposes, they have like certain, you know, show codes and episode codes and whatnot. Like, so it's the same show.
I would not be shocked if their metadata, like their software, was just like, we don't know how to process a show that keeps changing its title. Because I mean, like American Horror Story, I presume you could just say on IMDb, it says American Horror Story season whatever. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go with all the ad, you know.
Yeah, or I think it's made more awkward by the fact that there is another show that's just called Pretty Little Liars.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's hoping that halfway through Summer School, we just pivot with no warning and just start talking about episodes of Ravenswood.
I think last we checked, you can't even get those on iTunes, but I think they're available somewhere.
Like Freevee or something like that?
Yeah. Like maybe on like the Freeform app or something.
You know, I didn't necessarily love the first 5 episodes, which all I watched, but was it better than Original Sin? Yes.
I just remember the girl who stole Caleb's haircut and really kind of irrevocably changed him from then on. Like, I think that's maybe one reason why Spaleb worked. It was because like the Hannah Caleb thing, like it kind of ended when he cut his hair and came back from Ravenswood. He was a different person from then on.
One of the reasons Spaleb worked also because of the incredible chemistry that was hotter than the sun. Yeah. All right, folks.
All right. Well, we'll see you soon. Can't wait. GameOnTrouble.com.
Do it. Buy it.
Peace.